All right, this message here, we're going to talk about Revelation chapter 20, verses 7 through 15, message number 5. And in this, we're going to especially focus on Satan's final rebellion, the Gog and Magog reference. Oops, I got Satan's final rebellion in there twice. That's what happens when you're doing slides at 1 o'clock in the morning. Satan's little season theory, the Great White Throne, and death and Hades. So let's start with the first two verses. When the 1,000 years are expired, Satan shall be loosed out of his prison and shall go out to deceive the nations which are in the four quarters of the earth, Gog and Magog, to gather them together to battle, the number of whom is as the sand of the sea. And they went up on the breadth of the earth and compassed the camp of the saints about in the beloved city, and fire came down from God out of heaven and devoured them. Now, we read here that Satan's going to be loosed. There's a purpose for this loosing. It's to deceive the nations. Again, we're back to this whole literal thing. I take this exactly literal. He was literally bound and literally cast into a prison in the abyss. He's literally loosed, and he's let free for a literal little season. Now, I take this in the sense that he's let loose to deceive individuals from every nation, not to actually deceive some nations. He's going to gather individuals out of every nation on the planet, but no nation is going to be deceived. What we have to understand in this context is when Satan is let loose, this isn't the tribulation 2.0. This isn't this age 2.0. The Lord Jesus will still be on the throne. He will absolutely dominate the entire world. He will not lose control over a single country. He's not going to lose control over a single state of any country. He's not going to lose control over a single city in any state in the entire planet. The saints will still be in absolute charge of the whole world. This is just gathering all the malcontents, and they gather to Jerusalem. Now, they're going to gather for a battle, but this is going to end up being not a battle at all. This is just a glorified version of Occupied Wall Street with a bunch of malcontents who have no idea what they're talking about, throwing a hissy fit protest. That's all this is. And that's going to be destroyed by fire that comes down from heaven. Now, God has a purpose in this. Why does he allow Satan to be let loose one more time? Well, just like he allowed the iniquity of the Antichrist to sift and divide the whole world in the tribulation, he's going to do the same thing here. We come to the end of the millennium. There's going to be some unbelievers on the planet. And he's going to bring out the delusion one more time. We don't know what form it's going to take because it doesn't tell us, just that he's going to bring a delusion. And he's going to sift the world again. And this is going to sift out just perfectly. Not one believer is going to accidentally end up in his camp, and not one person that's unsaved is going to stay out of his camp. God's got this nailed to a science. This is the same thing as the mark of the beast versus the seal of God. Now, one other thing, and you've probably heard this taught before, I think it's worthy of note, that every great age division in the dispensations of salvation ends with an apostasy, a rebellion, and a judgment. This is exactly what we see here. It's going to end with an apostasy that gathers all the unbelievers, they gather against Jerusalem, and they end up with a judgment. Now, what's nice about this, because these don't take over any portion of the earth, they're not allowed to defile any part of the earth, the fire that comes only takes care of this group of defiled people. That fire that comes down from heaven doesn't have to destroy the whole earth, because the Lord's kingdom has covered the whole earth, and it doesn't cease to cover the whole earth. Now, it says a little season. I don't know if this is 5 years or 50 years. If any of you figure that out, shoot me an email. But it's going to be short. That's all we know. It's not going to take long for this thing to go haywire in a hurry. From the time the Antichrist is loosed until the second coming, it only takes 7 years for that great defilement and that great delusion to do his thing. And Now, we read in Revelation 12:12 that during the middle of the tribulation, when Satan's cast out of heaven, he comes down to earth having great wrath. He knows his time is short. Can you imagine how angry he's going to be at the end of the millennium when he's already spent 1,000 years in prison and he gets let loose and he knows he's only got a short season? I think he's going to be the maddest that any individual in eternity has ever been mad. Now, and I did mention this, I'll touch on it one more point, that this rebellion, it's not actually dividing the world like the world is divided now, where the world's controlled largely by the powers of darkness. This is just a protest that gathers against Jerusalem. They don't conquer anything except a bunch of the hearts of malcontents. So the evidence for a mere protest, you look at the nature of the kingdom. How do we know that this didn't take over any part of the world? Well, because the Bible plainly tells us the nature of the kingdom. Daniel 2:44, the Lord's kingdom is a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. Daniel 2:44, a kingdom which shall stand forever. Daniel 7:14, his dominion is an everlasting dominion. Daniel 7:18, the saints shall possess the kingdom forever. So they never lose their hold on the kingdom at all, not one city. Micah 4:7, the Lord shall reign in Mount Zion forever. So the kingdom is not loosened anywhere on the planet. Just gather malcontents. I'm going to read a couple of these passages. 7:18 says, the saints of the Most High shall take the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, even forever and forever. You can't get any more emphatic than that. It's for eternity. Once the second coming establishes the kingdom, it's handed over to the saints. Those saints shall stay unchallenged, unthreatened for all of eternity. For the ages of the ages. Daniel 2:44, in the days of these kings, the 10 ungodly kings, shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. So there's zero threat. If this is what the kingdom looks like, then when Satan is let loose for a little season, it cannot threaten this or undermine it one iota. Now, they're trying to, but they're just going to gather a bunch of malcontents, head to Jerusalem, throw a glorified Occupy Wall Street protest, and it will be destroyed by fire from heaven. In Revelation chapter 20, verses 7 and 9, we read about Gog and Magog. And when 1,000 years are expired, Satan shall be loosed out of his prison, shall go out to deceive the nations which are in the four quarters of the earth, Gog and Magog, to gather them together to battle, the number of whom is as the sand of the sea. And they went up on the breadth of the earth, encompassed the camp of the saints about in the beloved city, and fire came down from God out of heaven and devoured them. Now, this is a large puzzle for many people. They're thinking, why do we see Gog and Magog here and Gog and Magog in Ezekiel 38 and 39? So some people say, well, I think there's only one Gog and Magog, and I'm going to put it all in the future at the end of the millennium. And some say, no, I don't know what to do with it. Maybe we put them both at the end or before the tribulation. No matter what they do, they're going to struggle. I think the real solution that we have here is that when you think about it, we had the four empires, the Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greek, and Rome, they're all represented in the golden image in Daniel chapter 2. When the stone not cut out by hands comes down from heaven, it hits that image on the feet, and the whole image is destroyed. There's an organic connection between all these empires. They're successive, but the Babylonian iniquity goes from the head all the way to the feet. It's the same thing manifesting itself in different forms. And they're gone. They're absolutely destroyed at the second coming. So at the end of the millennium, when the messianic kingdom is threatened, the Bible can't go to Babylon because Babylon no longer exists. It can't go to Egypt. Egypt is not one of those times of the Gentile powers. So the standard types are not available. So why do we see Gog and Magog? Well, during the time of the Gentiles, the northern hordes represented by Gog and Magog, which would be the Scythians and the Scandinavians and the Germans and the Gauls and some related peoples up there, like the Geats, which were the Goths or the Dutch. These folks were the northern hordes. They invaded the Middle East and Turkey over and over again. They invaded Babylon. They fought against Babylon. They invaded and fought against the Medo-Persian Empire. They fought with Greece. The only nation that Alexander the Great came against, he could not defeat. He got beat back over and over again when he tried to take on these northern hordes in the mountains in the area of the Black Sea. And he finally just gave up. And he just went on towards India. He's not going to waste his time on them anymore. Now, these northern hordes overthrew Rome four times and ended up collapsing the western half of the Roman Empire, led to the divided Roman Empire. So you've got these northern hordes over and over again posing a threat to God's ordained government in the Middle East. The God ordained the affairs of the world to be dominated by Babylon, then by Medo-Persia, then by Greece, then by Rome, then by divided Rome, and then by fractured Rome, and ultimately when the fractured pieces come back together to 10 toes in the last days. God gave it to them. Doesn't mean they're godly, but he gave the government to them. So these hordes are representing that iniquity which is opposed to God's ordained established government on earth. This is why when we come into the millennium and we have Christ's kingdom here on earth, that's God's ordained established government. And these northern hordes, that spirit that was here for all of the history prior to the millennium, is going to return and it's going to dominate the whole world. And that spirit of Gog and Magog, dominated by Gog and Magog, is going to come down one more time, gather the world against Jerusalem. So it just represents the rebellion against God's established government. Now, what's interesting, when you go later in history, you're going to see in history the Holy Roman Empire, that was the efforts of the northern peoples, Germany and Austria and Hungary and some of those nations, to dominate the Roman Empire. That was not God's will, that was rebellion against God's will. We see Nazi Germany, the northern hordes again, trying to dominate Europe and the Middle East and North Africa. We see the Soviet Union as these northern hordes again trying to dominate the Middle East and Europe and North Africa. And right now with the BRICS nations group, we see those northern hordes strengthening themselves with China and other nations. Again, it's a northern horde effort to try and overthrow the dominance of God's ordained Roman Empire for the last days. So this spirit has been around for thousands of years, and it's going to be here again at the end of the 1,000 years. Now, when we come to Satan's little season theory, Revelation 20, verse 3, we read, "And cast him into the bottomless pit, shut him up, and set a seal upon him that he should deceive the nations no more till the 1,000 years should be fulfilled, and after that he must be loosed a little season." Now, some of you maybe have heard of this Satan's little season theory. If you've heard of it, raise your hands. Wow. All right. This is going to be fun. The problem is you guys don't waste time on TikTok. Good for you. But I run into tons of people who have been influenced by the preterist camp, who take prophecy figuratively, but yet they're influenced by premillennialism. Normally these people are 40 and under. And this theory says, and this is a real deep conspiracy, if you know the truth, we've already been through the millennium. And we are in Satan's little season right now. And this is the time of his rebellion. Well, give me some proof that we're in Satan's little season and we've been through the kingdom. Well, all you have to do is look at all these gorgeous cathedrals that are built in Europe, and you know There's no way modern man can build stuff like that. We can't build the Taj Mahal. We can't build St. Peter's Basilica. We can't build anything like this. This was all built during the glory days of the kingdom when Jesus was reigning here on earth. And then they point to evidence of the flood and they say, see, this is evidence that the truth has got covered up. And so they're just all over the map. Well, what's funny about this is error often has its own death right in the context and the associated passages that it's trying to teach. I mean, when you stop and think about this, there's a lot of arguments against this conspiracy theory. I'm just going to mention a few off the top of my head. In the Bible, at the second coming, every tall mountain on earth is shaken down. And we ultimately see from Isaiah and a few other the books, the prophets, that Jerusalem, the Mount of Jerusalem, Mount Zion, is going to be exalted above all the other mountains on earth. So how can we be in Satan's little season? Right now, Mount Everest is the tallest mountain on earth. It's like 8 times taller than Mount Zion. How does this work? If we were in Satan's little season after the millennium, Mount Zion would be the tallest mountain on earth. The geography is not going to change just because the millennium has come to an end. Satan can't change geography. And there's a whole bunch of arguments like this. Another one is that there's no more sea in the millennium. Now, whether you take that absolutely or relatively, it's certainly not fulfilled now. We got the massive Atlantic Ocean, the even more massive Pacific Ocean, a massive Indian Ocean. This would not be the case if we were past the millennium and in Satan's little season. This kind of stuff is simply a massive ignorance of the Bible. But you know, here's the rub when it comes to conspiracy theories. Conspiracy theories don't boil down to a real concern for evidence. They never have, and they never will. I want to point out there's a difference between pursuing evidence and pursuing doubt. A real investigator pursues evidence. They will gather evidence on both sides. They will weigh the evidence. They will make an intelligent, rational decision after they gathered all the evidence and weighed all the evidence. But there's a spirit of doubt running rampant through the Western world, particularly in America, where the greatest badge of honor is not investigation. It's not being a Berean. The greatest badge of honor is doubting stuff. Just doubt in and of itself is a badge of honor. So you doubt history, no matter how well proven it is. You doubt the fundamental doctrines of evangelicalism. You doubt premillennialism. You doubt dispensationalism. Anything that this doubt gets thrown against, it's a badge of honor. A badge of honor to doubt it. If a person goes down this path being influenced by the spirit of doubt, you will never investigate anything ever again the way investigation should be done. All you're going to do is gather a handful of selective evidence to support your doubts. This is the most dangerous spirit that's invading the church today, is the spirit of doubt. Never confuse the spirit of doubt with the spirit of investigation. They are not the same thing. So I mentioned some arguments against Satan's little season theory. I mentioned the nature of the kingdom. If we're in Satan's little season, how come we don't see Jesus ruling from Jerusalem? How come we don't see every capital of every nation on earth dominated by the believers? That's what it's going to be in Satan's little season. Right now, there's no evidence that there was ever a millennium on earth. The mountains are way too big. The oceans are way too big. The Dead Sea is not an active fishery. It's going to be an active fishery in the kingdom. And the deserts are not blossoming as a rose. So you look at these kind of arguments and you realize there's no way under the sun we can be in Satan's little season. And I've given up trying to ever argue anything more than one or two little sentences with people that believe this theory. Because when people go down this path, if they can't be moved by 1 ounce of evidence, they can't be moved by a ton of evidence in a bulldozer. They're too far gone. Revelation 20 and 10, and the devil that deceived them was cast into the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast and the false prophet are, and they shall be tormented day and night forever and forever. Now, the lake of fire and brimstone. Brimstone refers to sulfur compounds. Whether it's compounds proper or whether it's just an aggregate of things that have a high bunch of sulfur in there, that's what brimstone is. It burns. Sulfur burns very hot. It can burn north of 3,000 degrees. That's hot enough to melt steel. It's hot enough to turn rock into dust. This is why when Sodom and Gomorrah were hit by fire and brimstone, they were turned into ashes. When this comes down, it'll take clay brick, turn it to ash. It'll take limestone, turn it to ash. It can take any stone outside of the hardest stones on earth and turn it to ash. Now, the place of general punishment here is going to be the lake of fire. It's a place of eternal punishment. It's going to hold humans, fallen angels like Satan, and Nephilim, hybrids like the giants, the later giants, and the serpent seed. Now, it was created for Satan and his angels. This has always boggled my mind, that hell, the lake of fire, was originally designed for Satan and his angels, and yet anyone influenced by them ends up there. And I think this is because they're owning the fatherhood of the devil rather than the fatherhood of God. Now we come to the beast and the false prophet. They are cast alive in a lake of fire at the start of the 1,000 years. And Satan is cast there after the 1,000 years. He's sequestered in the abyss for a while, and then he's let back out. And when he's captured the second time, he's cast into the lake of fire. So, but this raises an interesting question here. We have the Satan and the Antichrist and the false prophet in the lake of fire. Now, I want you to think about this. Some folks hold or believe that the new heavens and the new earth is going to involve the annihilation of the current creation, and it's replaced by a second creation. And the number one argument they use for this, when you question on why they do that, well, they're going to point to Revelation 21:1, which states the fact that there's going to be a new earth and a new heavens. And then they say, the heavens have to be destroyed and the earth has to be destroyed. They're so defiled, they have to be destroyed. But I think to myself, wait a minute. Why would the innocent creation, which has been polluted by the angels and man, why would innocent creation have to be destroyed and cease to exist? The actual perps, the perpetrators, they don't cease to exist. There's no annihilation there. They're cast into the lake of fire and sequestered for eternity. That's just some food for thought. We're going to cover that section a little farther later. Now, they're tormented day and night forever in the lake of fire. This is one of the strongest arguments in the Bible for eternal punishment. This is eternal conscious punishment. They're tormented. Now, I want you to think of the line too, day and night forever. Not only is this an evidence for eternal punishment, again, it's one of these clues that come up over and over again in the book of Revelation, that there is time in eternity. That day and night, for ages of the ages, they're going to be punished. The sun's going to rise, the sun's going to set for all of eternity. And for all of eternity, night and day, these evil beasts are going to be punished. Now, here's another interesting thing. You consider that this is stating the eternal punishment of God in as strong a language as you could state it. You can't be any more clear that there is eternal punishment. Tormented day and night forever and ever. And yet people deny eternal punishment. Whole denominations deny it. When you deny something this clearly stated in the Bible, this is tantamount to denying the authority of Scripture. And it's a denial that the Almighty God wrote the Bible. You're basically writing your own Bible and inventing your own God. This is idolatry, every bit as iniquitous as any idolatry in the history of the world. This is intellectual idolatry. It's sophisticated idolatry. But it is idolatry.